I'm Rachel.
And this is Unassigned Reading,
where we discuss the books you're never going to talk about in English class.
Right. YA, sci-fi, fantasy, and all the other genres you read for fun.
Obviously, this is not a spoiler-free podcast.
So many spoilers.
This month, we're reading A Prince Among Books.
Right, because we're talking about Red, White, and Royal Blue, a super sweet contemporary romance book.
That honestly gave me all the feels.
All of them.
We especially wanted to discuss this book this month since in the US, June is LGBTQ Pride Month. We're always trying to make sure we're discussing a broad range of topics and experiences on this podcast with the books that we choose.
And there's no better time to discuss a book featuring bisexual and gay characters than during Pride Month.
Amen. But before we get any more into that, maybe we should tell them a little more about the book and what it's all about?
I mean, theoretically, that is a good point.
Yeah, so how about you give us a one-minute summary?
Less theoretically, I fully read this book a month ago, and I may have forgotten a few things.
And I fully finished rereading it 2 days ago, and sometimes that's just how life works. All right, are you ready?
Sure.
You're gonna be. All right, go now.
So Alex is the son of the first female president of the United States, and he and the Prince of England don't like each other, but he gets invited to the prince's older brother's wedding, where they get into a fight, and it's a huge PR disaster, and his mom's up for re-election, so Alex has to make things right. So he has to go, like, and do all these publicity stunts with the Prince of England, where they're like, haha, just kidding, we're actually best friends. But then Alex gets to know Henry, and he's like, actually, this dude's kind of funny, and they're texting and stuff. And then Alex is like, maybe I'm not straight. And Alex sort of figures out that, like, A, he's bisexual, and B, he's into Henry. And it turns out Henry is also gay. So they, like, kiss at a party at the White House, and then they have a secret relationship for a while where, like, some people know, but they're, like, trying to make sure that, like, it doesn't get public because obviously, like, this is going to be a big deal with the first son dating the Prince of England. But because it's re-election time, of course it comes out that they are dating one another, and it's a big thing. And,
time. I'm gonna call you there. Okay, I let good. You go so long over because I was just enjoying it.
I'm glad you...
I gave you fully 20 extra seconds because I was just like, I could tell you were running out of steam, which is why I stopped you, but I was like, I'm just going to let her go. I like this recap.
That pause was, I was like, I don't remember how it resolves after this. I was like, I know it ends happy again.
That was, Rachel, tell me to stop. There. Save me.
That was, I was like, okay, if I'm at like 53, Rachel can just call it now.
Yeah, you were at 120. Okay, you actually did, I mean, you did a good job up to the point where you forgot what happened next. But yeah, basically what happens is they fall in love, they get outed, and so then both the White House and the royal family kind of have to face up with, you know, how are we going to handle this situation, both from a political and a personal stance, because obviously, personally, for these two young men, being outed is a hugely, hugely awful thing, especially when you're in the limelight like that. And so, of course, mom president, we love her here, she's like, is this forever? Do you feel forever about him? Alex is like, yes. She's like, okay, then we're doing this. And then Henry takes a little more convincing, but once he's in, he's like fully in. And then they convince his grandma, who is, I mean, and for the record, both like, we'll talk about how this is an alternate president in a minute, but like, this is not the royal family that we know. Obviously, all of those princes are married now. So they convince his grandmother, who's hugely homophobic, to just let him be who he is and to like officially be courting Alex and take all these like publicity photos and stuff. And then they find out that the opposition, this just total jerk who's running against Alex's mom for the 2020 election, is the one who outed them, that he was like surveilling them to try and find dirt and got these photos and had them published. So that pretty much tanks his campaign, and everything's happy, and his mom gets reelected because Texas becomes a swing state and they win it for him, and it's really happy and good. The end.
The end.
The end.
It's such a happy book, and it makes me very happy to even, like, talk about it.
It's such a good book. I feel like it's one of those books that, A, it's incredibly funny. I don't know. We'll probably talk about this a little just through other things, but it is one of the funniest books I've read in a really long time. Like, one of those books that even, like, I mentioned briefly that I was rereading this book because I actually read it for the first time this past February before it came out, and so I was like, okay, I'm going to need to reread this if we're going to, like, really be diving into it. And I was still having to, like, stop to laugh out loud at jokes because it's just so funny. It's a very witty book. Like, it has that kind of Shakespearean verbal sparring, which is one of my favorite things to read in a romance, is characters that, you know, clearly are deeply flirting it up, but they're doing it in a very witty way. I love that. And they're both just very funny characters in different ways. And it just makes you smile. And it's not that it ignores the reality of the situation or is totally upbeat and positive all the time. Obviously, we talked about the fact that these two characters were outed for the political gain of a homophobic opponent, which is pretty awful. But even that isn't dealt with in a way where it's like, you know, world ending for these characters. And it's partially because of how it's written, and then, you know, I think partially because of the reality of their situations. But yeah, even though it's not ignoring reality or painting necessarily, you know, a perfect picture, it's still just this wonderfully lighthearted book. I like, you just finish it and feel happy, I feel like.
I agree.
Happy and hopeful. Yeah.
So I think the first thing we're going to talk about, because we wanted to focus on a book this month that featured LGBTQ characters, is we're going to talk about the bisexuality in the book and bisexuality in literature in general.
Yeah, because it's Alex's coming out story is a very prominent part of the book, or not even exactly his coming out story so much as his own personal journey to realizing that he is not straight. Because even though I would not describe this as like a book that is a coming out story, a big part of the book is about him realizing, because he begins the book, no idea that he likes guys, although it's pretty obvious by the way he's always describing Henry's face as like perfectly symmetrical and being like annoyed at how windswept he is when he gets off of horses and stuff. And you're like, Alex, bud, you're super queer. Like, you're not straight. My dude, it's not happening. But a big thing is that he realizes he isn't straight when he starts to fall for Henry, and that also he's had a crush on him like forever and didn't realize it. So that's a really big part of the story, is him figuring that out.
Yeah. And so I wanted to talk about that too, because like Casey McQuiston, the author, talks about that. She has a really great, it's not an interview, she actually wrote an article for bookish.com, and we'll link that in the show notes. But I want to read this quote because I thought it was like great, and it's talking about that. Alex was bi because I had never gotten to really fall for a big, shiny romance centering on someone who loved like me, and I wanted to create one. He was bi because I was tired of handing my heart to stories in which bisexuality was a punchline, or a reason not to love someone, or, most often, ignored completely. He was bi because I love being bi. I love the range of it, the ebbs and flows, the way it forces me to spend more time with my own feelings. I wanted to show that.
I love that. That's such a great quote.
Yeah, and I thought it was really good because it felt like a very, it's not like the coming out story we read a lot of in books. This was different. It was someone who like is like slowly figuring out that they're not straight, and like also like in sort of like a very public way, since they're the first son and this is the Prince of England. And I just thought it was really good. It's something that I think we don't always see in media.
Yeah. Well, of course, I know like one of the points you're getting to here also is, in addition to the bisexual representation we get in this book, also this issue with bisexual erasure, which is a thing that some people may be familiar with, some people may not be, but it's this issue in media, and even in media that is representing or trying to represent LGBTQ characters, that often characters who you might think were bi or seem to be bi or even might actually identify as bi, they aren't labeled that way. Like, you'll never, it's common for a character that most fans like think is bi. I can think of like TV shows and stuff that have done this where they say, oh, I don't like labels, you know, or things like that. And so I think it's also really important, especially based off what she said in that article that she wrote, that, you know, we get a character who is very unapologetically, he's very unapologetically bi, and it doesn't, you know, make him who he is or define him holistically or anything, but that he is who he is and he's not going to apologize for it. And also just the fact that the book, I mean, I didn't actually count, but it uses the word bisexual to describe him and several other characters a number of times. So, and that's something that you don't always see in literature and media, is a character who, you know, is attracted to their own gender and other genders. You don't necessarily see them being described as bi or pan.
And I just thought that was a great thing in this book, how it's very present, it's very prominent. There's not like any sort of like hiding it, like saying it once and then it's not really a thing anymore. This is who Alex is, and it's fully part of the story, which I think definitely comes from the author's perspective.
Yeah, and I love there's even a moment toward the end where after the whole awful being outed thing happens, where Alex and Henry are making a public statement, like Alex as the first son is making a public address to America, and he even says, you know, I am bisexual, this is who I am. And I was like, that's a really powerful moment too, because that's not even just him acknowledging it to himself or to his family, but he's like looking out at his country and, you know, the world in a way, and being like, this is me, this is who I am, and I'm not gonna erase it, I'm not gonna hide it. And I thought that was really awesome too.
Yeah. So I want to talk some about the world in this book, and I'm going to present to you a concept that isn't really a thing, but I think for this book it should be.
Yeah.
So we have the concept of alternative history, where we take history and we change something and we explore history through changes we've made to it. You know what alternative history is. We've read alternative history stories before on the show. So I want to throw out my idea of alternative present, which in some ways is a little silly because, like, in most ways,
that's not silly. That is totally a thing.
Okay. I feel like most contemporary novels, romance or otherwise, like, to some extent, they are an alternative present. Like, they're about fictional characters. They aren't, like, showing our world necessarily as it truly 100% is. There's some amount of fiction to all fiction, right? But this, I felt like, took it a step further because it feels like alternative history in a very weird way, and that it diverged substantially from our universe some number of years ago. Not necessarily 4 years ago when Ellen, Alex's mom, became president, but sometime earlier. But I want to talk about Ellen first, because, and this is going to be like probably a I lived in Texas for a while thing, so I don't know like how national this is going to be, but as I was reading the book, I was like, so Ellen is from Texas, and as I'm reading the book, I'm like, boy, Ellen sure reminds me of Wendy Davis, who was a Democrat from Texas. She was well known for doing a filibuster at the Texas Senate. She ran for governor of Texas. So she was a pretty well-known politician in Texas. And I found a quote from an interview where Casey McQuiston says, honestly, the only character who's actually based on a real-life figure is Ellen. I took a lot of inspiration from Wendy Davis, another Democratic woman from Texas. So I nailed that
one. I love that you caught that.
Well, I think, and this is because I had just moved out of Texas when she was running for governor, so I was, like, still very,
so you were very,
like,
aware of that.
Aware of, like, politics in Texas, and, like, my friends were still in Texas, so they're sharing a lot of stuff. So I was very aware of her, and I've seen her, like, speak and stuff, like, on videos on Facebook and stuff. So I was, like, very aware of her. And it's like, boy, Ellen sure reminds me of Wendy Davis. So that was kind of fun. But so this is a universe in where there's this difference in that this woman, Ellen, runs for president and wins in 2016.
Yeah, in the 2016 election.
Yeah. Which, honestly, it kind of made me depressed. When it, like, occurred to me that that's when she'd become president. Because it was like, this is the universe I want to be living in. I like this universe much better.
Some weird, I think, mixed emotions with this book. Because on the one hand, I think the first time I read it, it was mostly just like joy and happiness, especially since it was the first time I read this book and I loved this book. But as I was rereading it, I think I had a little bit more of that, almost that melancholy sense.
Yeah.
Of yeah, what you were saying, like, this is kind of, in a way, what could, I mean, not exactly what could have been, but, you know, yeah. Like, this is the universe I want to be in, kind of, because you do, I mean, you can't not see the similarities, I think, to a 2016 election where a woman wins.
Yes.
You know, and then especially when they're talking about the 2020 election and the opponent she's up against is pretty awful guy, you know?
Yeah.
And seeing the way that he is using, like, homophobia and racism and sexism and stuff to try and get ahead and win this election against her and her family is, it's disheartening. But it's also, you know, it's disheartening, and I think it's also hopeful in a way to, like, read this book
and think about. And I have another quote. You
know, what we can still strive toward.
So this is from that interview I just mentioned where she talks about Wendy Davis. This one is from bookpage.com, and I'll also put this one in the show notes. But she's asked, so the question she's asked is, reading the alternate political reality of Red, White, and Royal Blue was a very emotional experience for me, and I expect it will be so for a lot of other readers. What was that like for you as a writer? And I'm not going to read her whole response because it's probably longer than I should read all of on a podcast, but I'm going to read part of it.
Story time with Sarah.
It was about trying to reconnect with hope and the feeling that progress is possible and that the moral arc of the universe does actually bend towards justice. So it was this journey of, how can I do this realistically and respectfully at the same time? How can I call this out without getting lost in the politics when it's supposed to be a rom-com? How do I find hope and still mirror what's happening right now? I did my best, so I hope people find it as cathartic to read as I did to write.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that sums it up really well.
I thought so, too. When I read that, I was like, yes, that was how I felt. Because it's cathartic, and it's optimistic, and it's frustrating. It's a lot of things all at once. And it does, it's like reading, looking into a different universe that, like,
right.
Well, I like more than ours.
Right. Well, and it's like we talked about a little bit before. I don't think in any way it's trying to present a perfect universe. You know, bad things still happen. Bad people still exist. And there's still, I mean, there's still conflict. You can't have a story without conflict. But it's still, I think, a hopeful world.
Yes.
You know, like a kind of a what-if scenario. And in our ongoing quest to try and make everyone read author's notes, because I think at this point, anybody who listens to this podcast has to know. You gotta read the author's notes, guys. But anyway, she has a few great comments from the author's note, too. I don't know if you were able to read that on whatever edition of the book
you were reading. No, I did an audiobook for this one, which was, like, okay. Good and bad, because sometimes I had to pause the audiobook because, like,
to laugh out loud.
For that, but also because sometimes, like, I knew Alex was going to do something embarrassing, and it was, like, so well written that I had to keep, like, pausing and playing and pausing
Alex
and playing because,
like,
it hurt.
My favorite problem child. He's just, like, screwing himself over literally all the time.
Yeah,
does
especially
not know what to,
like,
do with himself.
Chapter 2 where the whole cake incident happens.
Oh,
like,
the cake.
Oh my
you
gosh.
Can tell something awful is about.
You know,
you just
it's
know Alex is about to just fall into that cake and make a whole international incident out of it. It's great. He's just such a little drama queen. But yeah, so there are some great quotes that kind of tie into that in the author's note as well. And she talks about how for months after November, she says, I gave up writing this book. Suddenly, what was supposed to be a tongue-in-cheek parallel universe needed to be escapist, trauma-soothing, alternative but realistic reality. Not a perfect world, but one still believably effed up, just a little better, a little more optimistic. And then she said, what I had hoped to do, and what I hope I have done with this book by the time you finished it, my dear reader, is to be a spark of joy and hope that you needed. So I feel like that does a really good job of kind of encompassing a lot of the things we've been talking about as well, that this, you know, and I also do think it's interesting that she had the idea for this book before this had happened, that she was in the process of writing it, you know, presumably maybe at the start of 2016, or, you know, who knows exactly when she started it, but anyway, that this was already something that was in her mind, and then, you know, kind of the ways that maybe the present did change it a little, because it did become more of an exercise in escapism.
Yeah, I found this, like, super escapist and, like, truly a joyful book. Like, it just made me so happy, and I want to keep rereading it because it's just a truly happy experience to read this book.
Same. But before you think about rereading it and before we move on to any other subjects, we need to talk about another awesome podcast that I think our listeners would definitely enjoy.
SFF Yeah is a science fiction and fantasy podcast from Book Riot.
Yay, Book Riot. Book Riot is North America's largest independent book site, and they have so many awesome podcasts. But this one is hosted by Sharifa and Jin, and each week they take on a new theme to recommend science fiction and fantasy reads, from epic fantasy to hard sci-fi to just all of the infinite subgenres of speculative fiction and beyond.
They talk about what's new, novel, and downright strange from the science fiction and fantasy headlines. And we definitely think if you enjoy listening to us, you'll also enjoy listening to them.
Yeah, so go check out SFF Yeah on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcatcher of your choice.
We'll also have a link to SFF Yeah in our show notes.
Another thing we should talk about with this book, since it is a romance, is one of, I think, probably both of our favorite romance tropes, enemies to lovers. Yes.
Yes.
Always a good one.
Yeah. Always.
I mean, so we talked a little bit about, obviously, this whole thing started with, like, an international incident where Alex pretty much accidentally shoved Henry, kind of accidentally shoved Henry into a, I don't, what did they even say? Was it like a $7,000 wedding cake or something?
A super expensive wedding cake.
It was a royal wedding cake, so just use your imagination.
Let's not say any royal wedding, though, because there are lots of royal weddings. This is the equivalent of Prince William's wedding that he,
yeah,
like.
Yeah, this was basically William and Kate.
Yeah.
So.
And Alex and Henry fall into their super expensive fancy wedding cake. So it's, yeah, like, it's not,
it's
good.
It's a big deal. And so obviously they start out, or I should say, Alex starts out thinking that he hates Henry. I already talked a little bit before about how it's maybe not so much hate as like a lot of repressed feelings, which,
yeah,
becomes obvious pretty early on and he realizes later. And it is interesting though, because it's an enemies to lovers story, you know, a kind of an enemies to friends to lovers story, because these two characters go from seemingly hating each other to being forced to fake a friendship to developing an actual friendship. And then Henry was already very aware that he had feelings for Alex, but them realizing that they had feelings for each other and then thinking that it was just this like casual hookup thing. And then finally, Alex, being the dum-dum that he is, finally realizing, oh, wait, I'm head over heels in love with this guy. Maybe I should do something about that. So it's kind of an interesting, I think, progression to begin with. But it is also kind of one of those things, again, I think we talked about this a little bit last month in the Kits Quotient with the, you know, two characters who are in a relationship but kind of don't realize it or won't admit it. You've got a similar thing here where,
yeah,
these two guys are clearly in a committed relationship, clearly head over heels in love with each other, but for a good part of the book, they just think it's like booty calls, basically.
Yeah.
And I should also possibly take this moment to point out that, like many romance books, this one is not nearly as explicit as The Kiss Quotient, I will say, by any stretch of the imaginations, but it is not young adult. It is new adult or adult romance, and it does include some, you know, sex scenes. So, there you go. That's that. So that was my little disclaimer on that. If,
yeah,
I mean, I can't imagine that anybody did not expect that for a romance book.
Yeah.
Like,
I did enjoy this because I think this is the first new romance or
new adult
romance. Because it's like a genre I've known about for a while, and I've read things that probably should have been classified as new adult instead of young adult. But this is,
yeah,
the first thing I've read that was actually like marketed as new adult,
yeah,
and didn't change the age.
It's
of
a tricky
characters.
Category, and we're not even going to try and get into all the like logistics and marketing that like go into why it never really took,
yeah,
off as a genre outside of romance.
I'm really
new
hoping
adult does
this
exist
might
as a genre
like
in
help
romance.
The genre though, because new adult should be a thing, and there are like a
it
lot of
should
reasons,
and I think and it will continue to be a thing in romance. But again, we can't talk for
it
an
would,
hour about this,
yeah.
I could talk for an hour about this, so
I
we
could
can't
too.
But basically suffice it to say, it is a thing in romance and really not a thing anywhere else, unfortunately,
yeah.
But yes.
Basically, it means the characters are, like, in their
they're like college
years.
Yeah. And usually for any, the simplest way to put it is that in romance, if they're in college, it's usually considered new adult. And in any other genre, it's usually considered adult because the new adult category does not really exist as such outside of romance. But anyway, we're not going to get too much into that. But speaking of romance, another thing I want to talk about with this book is royal romances, because royal romances have been having a moment.
They have.
Like, they've been having a moment for a while, but and they've been having a moment. Like, we've talked about quite a few royal romances on this podcast at this point.
I love Alyssa Cole, so, like, you guys have heard me talk about all of her
and her
royal
Reluctant Royal series a lot. And she has one other royal series, I think, as well, doesn't she? Or she's about to.
She's going to. She's going to. She hasn't, like, I don't think any dates have been announced yet. At least they had the last time I checked, but that's going to be, like, Royal Runaways is her going to be her next
series.
Sadly,
she does not have any, like, stories with an actual, you know, royal falling in love that's, like, a queer royal romance, but she does have a novella. I think it's a novella called
She has
Once Ghosted, Twice Shy, I think.
Yes.
That is, like, kind of tangentially a part of that series. It's kind of a shoot off, and I think
I would say
one of the
you
women
read
works
these?
For. Yeah, I haven't read the series yet.
But
me trying to describe a series I haven't read.
A Prince on Paper is also while it is, like, about the romances between a man and a woman, there are a lot. I don't want to, like, give stuff away in the book, but it deals with, like, some LGBTQ themes as well.
Although still but not a queer
this is
romance.
The third book in a series, so, like, I don't want to give stuff away. But yes, it's not a queer romance, but
yeah. But hey, I mean, fingers crossed in the future she'll get to one of those. But
I think she will. I feel pretty confident she will. Eventually.
Yeah.
She's got a whole other series.
I also just recently finished reading Her Royal Highness by Rachel Hawkins, which was so much fun. It is fully a YA romance, but it's about a teenage girl who goes to boarding school in Scotland and winds up being the roommate of the Scottish princess, because in this universe there is still, like, a distinct Scottish royal family. And yeah, it's also kind of an enemies to lovers story, so fans of Red, White, and Royal Blue might enjoy it, even though it's quite different, because the princess seems like a total brat. Actually, the princess is kind of a total brat. Not quite in the same way that Alex is, but, you know, they've both got some bratty tendencies. And anyway, so, obviously, they wind up falling in love, because, like I said, royal romance. That one is really cute. There's also, I haven't read them, but I know The Princess Affair and The Princess Deception by Nell Stark, I think, are both FF royal romances. And then, you'll be very excited for this one. This is another one that's kind of, like, royal adjacent, which is kind of its own thing in books. But I don't consider those, like, real royal romances. But anyway, that's, you know, a different point. But I don't know if you've seen this. Jasmine Guillory.
I was about to mention it.
Yes. Coming out in October, called Royal Holiday. I really want to read it too. That's about,
I'm so excited.
She falls. I think it's a mom who winds up going on vacation.
It's the mom of one of the characters of Jasmine Guillory's series.
Really? Okay. See, I haven't really read Jasmine Guillory's stuff yet either, also on my list, so that's fun. I didn't realize that. But anyway, I think she winds up falling for someone who works for the royal family. It looks super cute. Very, like, Hallmark Christmas movie-esque, which I also love.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I cannot wait.
Super into it. So basically, what we're saying is, if you're into the world of royal romance, this is your moment, and there is just a wide world out there for you to explore. And speaking of other books out there that we want to read, I also want to talk a little bit before we wrap this up about sequels and what Casey McQuiston is going to write next.
Has she announced it, or are we speculating?
We're speculating a little bit here. So we're going to discuss this. I was telling Sarah earlier that I had done some deep dives on Casey McQuiston's Twitter, and that I was maybe shamelessly liking every funny, relevant thing I saw that she had tweeted, because, I mean, I do follow her and I've liked a lot of her stuff, but I was going back far and I kept liking stuff, and I was like, she probably has so many followers and interactions that she won't notice this at all. But, like, if she does, I kind of hope she's not like, who is this creeper going so far back into my tweets? liking things, but you know, if she does, I'm a fan. That's all there is to it. But anyway, so I want to talk about sequels and what she might be writing next, because basically this is what we know.
I feel
we
like know I know she's writing what she's writing next.
We know she's writing a book. Well, I'm going to tell you a few things, because I did some sleuthing, okay. Which was the purpose okay. Of the Twitter creeping, was really Twitter sleuthing, even though it was also a little creepy. So we know that she's writing a book. She has said that it's FF, so we know it's queer ladies. And she's also tweeted that her second book is essentially Unbury Your Gaze, a novel. And then... So, of course, my mind is going because I have so many hopes for all the sequels. And I'm like, oh, man, I want, like, maybe a Princess Bia and Nora book. I could see that happening. And I'd be super into it. I was like, I want June and Pez. Super think that's what it is. And then I also, ooh, this is the other one I desperately want also is a prequel with Henry's parents, who are at one point described as his mom as the princess who ran away with James Bond because his dad was... the actor who played James Bond. And I was like, if she doesn't write a prequel for that, ugh, be still my heart. That sounds amazing. Just like,
having read the
I want her to write everything.
Having read the quantity of romance I've read, I feel like June and Nora are like our next two most likely picks.
Do you think
like
June and Nora?
Sorry, June oh, okay. or
not
Nora.
As a pairing, but one
and.
Of them.
It could be and, but I think... Or.
It could be, although if I was pairing them up, I would say maybe, we don't know about Bia, we don't know anything about her relationships or her Ooh. Sexuality or anything, but I'm thinking I could see Bia and Nora being a thing.
I could see that.
And then maybe June and Pez. I could also see June and Nora, because there's definitely some hinting going on that maybe something happened between the two of them and Pez, but I also love June and Pez together.
Yeah. So
or
June
and Pez and Nora. I'm, you know, like, whatever. But I want to see more.
I have a whole thing where whichever one I think is going to be next is always the last pairing the author writes. Because that's just my luck.
So here's the part where I dash at least some of your hopes. Because in my Twitter sleuthing, she released a small excerpt from her work in progress. So for whatever she's working on right now. Where one of the characters is clearly named Jane. I think the love interest. Now, it is possible...
That could be a control F right there.
Sneaky. I know. I was going to say, it is possible she was sneaking. And that's actually June. Because that was my first thought. I saw that and I thought, oh, no, it's not. And then I thought, ooh, Jane is very close to June. So it's possible that that was very sneaky and actually June is at least one of the characters, in which case maybe June and Nora or whatever combo it is going to be next. Or it's possible that Jane is going to be the love interest of one of the characters and we just don't know who it will be the love interest for. Like, it's possible that it will still be one of the characters from this book. It's also possible she's writing a totally unrelated book.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we even know if she's writing a sequel?
We don't know. I'm hoping... Because in my heart of hearts, I want it. But I don't actually know that it's a sequel. I want her to write all of those sequels because I want books about all of these characters. But yeah, we don't actually know. So that is what all of my sleuthing has uncovered. I'll read it, whatever it is. Well, like, I'm super excited.
Oh, yeah. Like,
regardless. I couldn't find this.
From
but
this
I
book
felt...
alone, Casey McQuiston has become an auto-buy author for me. Like, this was
for sure.
So good. I'm just going to read whatever
she writes. I couldn't find
it
in my Twitter sleuthing / creeping, but I thought I remembered her tweeting something about, related to this book she's working on, that one of the girls had, like, a motorcycle jacket or a leather jacket or something, and Bia is described as having... a motorcycle jacket.
Rachel.
A number of times.
Rachel, you dug so deep.
I dug so deep. That one was actually, I saw that on her, like, her tweeting that whenever she tweeted it, but I couldn't find it when I was digging back through. But yes, when I say that she may have noticed a creepy girl liking really old tweets, I wasn't kidding. I dug deep. She tweets a lot, and I dug deep. So, anyway, that's what we know. And also all of my hopes and dreams for what she might be working on next.
Well, I think that's going to wrap up our episode about Red, White, and Royal Blue.
sadly. I mean, I wish we could talk about it forever, but we probably can't. So I guess I'll give a big shout out to Sahara Sky for the use of our theme song, Never Long Time Goes By, from the album Escapism.
And thanks for listening. You can get in touch with us by tweeting at unassignedpod over on Twitter or emailing us at unassignedreadingpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Tweet about the show or leave us a positive review over on iTunes. We'd love to know what you think of this episode or any others. Or tell us what books you'd like to see us discuss in the future. We're always open to book recs and suggestions.
You can also find transcripts and links to all our social media at unassignedreadingpod.com.
Next month, we'll be discussing An Unkindness of Ghosts by River Solomon.
I have been wanting to read this book for a while now.
And I actually just recently read it for the first time and absolutely loved it. It's a sci-fi novel set on a spaceship structured hauntingly similarly to the Antebellum South.
We're both really looking forward to diving into it and discussing all of the rich allegory and themes with all of you.
Even if I am going to have to reread it since I listened to it on audiobook last time. Such a burden to reread a great book.
Though, honestly, it's not like you need any more books to read.
True.
In the meantime, we leave you with these words of wisdom.
Exploring your sexuality. Healthy, but does it have to be with the Prince of England?